This program was...
You're going to meet a handful of these men of the 31st Tactical Fighter Wing, commanded by Colonel Warren Lewis, and you're going to see them in action in South Vietnam.
I did want to get to talk to all of you and give all of you a chance to see me. Warren Lewis. My home is in Iowa. I've been in the fighter business since World War II. I think there's nothing as great as fighter pilots and the people that support them. They're a different breed of cat than anybody else. They have to depend on themselves when they're alone in the aircraft to make all their decisions. We have trained them in the later years to become probably the most professional people that fly aircraft. And I'm real proud of all of you. You all know where we're going. And I guess our major job over there, as far as I'm concerned, will be supporting the Army in our role as Air Force cover to clear the air for them and to give them the close air support. Now, I want to wish all of you the best of luck on these trips. I told my wife it's like camping out, except it isn't going to be a week, it's going to be a whole year. So let's treat it that way. And may the good Lord bless all of you. Thank you.
Don Usry is a captain in the 309th Squadron of the 31st Tactical Fighter Wing. He's a fighter pilot. He's married, has two children. This is one of them. And this is the last day he expects to see his son and daughter and his wife until he returns from the war in Vietnam.
Where's your mom?
If he returns.
Want Daddy to tell you a story?
No.
You don't?
No.
Hey, where's Daddy going today?
A bit now.
Vietnam. You know where that is?
What? It don't suit me.
You gonna take care of Mommy while Daddy's gone?
Uh-huh.
You gonna be a good friend?
Uh-huh.
When will Daddy be back? You gonna have a birthday today?
No. It's a concert.
In the Skies is brought to you by
B.F. Goodrich, the name that spells quality in tires, chemicals, plastics, footwear, products for home, industry, and aviation. B.F. Goodrich.
Don Usry volunteered for duty in Vietnam, and on this last day, his wife Maggie thinks about the war and her husband.
I don't like the war, but there is a war. There have to be men there to fight the war, and these men have to be our professional soldiers. This is what Don is. This is what I expect him to do, and I accept it for that.
General Collins, Colonel Lee, gentlemen.
Colonel Frank Bussey is deputy commander for operations of the 31st Tactical Fighter Wing. He entered the Air Corps as a private in 1941. In World War II, he flew 120 combat missions in the Pacific. He flew 100 missions in Korea. It's his job to get the 31st to Vietnam.
Route to Hickam, 3 to Anderson, and 2 en route to Tuy Hoa. Total distance involved in this move is 9,785 nautical miles, with an estimate of 23 hours and 38 minutes flying time. Okay, before departing, we'll have a time hack. In 30 seconds, it will be 1:06 past the hour. Five, four, three, two, one, hack.
Until now, this moment, the war in Vietnam has been something other men fought. At Homestead Air Force Base in Florida, the war has been a target that doesn't fight back, a ground force that doesn't exist. But now these men of the Tactical Air Command are combat ready, and they know their job, to provide close air support to our fighting men on the ground. F-100 is an airplane built for speed and short distances. It was the first Air Force airplane to break the sonic barrier back in 1954. And to the men who fly the F-100, it's more than just a machine. It has a personality all its own. For every pilot, this airplane is the best one in the squadron, the best one in the air, the best one on the target. What you're seeing here high over the Pacific Ocean is the modern miracle of air-to-air refueling.
5-3 from 0-3, do you read?
Roger, reach your lock, clear.
Roger, my clear then.
You're clear to the contact position, no channel coming reading, 5-3, ready.
Hey, Roger.
0-2, you want your fuel the same way?
That is Roger, 1,000, 1,000, 1,500.
From the outside, it's a beautiful sight. Inside the cockpit, it requires precision and skill and guts. You know, if you run out of fuel, there's no way to go but down.
I 0-1.
Roger. 0-1, you have your scrap fuel offloaded.
Captain 06, Double 19, you are not taking fuel, sir.
Roger, back it off. This is the place, Thuy Hoa, 200 miles northeast of Saigon on the South China Sea. And it's the home away from home of the 31st Tactical Fighter Wing. For 1 year, or until they're shot out of the skies by the Viet Cong, the men of the 309th, who have just flown their machines across the Pacific, will fly their daily missions in support of the ground troops from this wind-swept sand pile, along with their brother squadrons, the 306th and 308th. Because it's the kind of war it is, a war of infiltration, a war where the enemy is everywhere. Tui Wa is a U.S. oasis practically cut off from the surrounding community. The other side of the barbed wire is off limits to the men of the 31st. Beyond it, life goes on almost as usual for the South Vietnamese. Inside of it, except for the distances separating the men from their families, and except for the fact that when they go out on their missions, they're shooting and being shot at, life goes on almost as usual for the men of the 31st. The important thing is never to forget, if you want to stay alive, that somebody out there doesn't like you. After the long, lonely flight from Homestead, it's very probable that the men of the 309th are just too tired to think about war. But it's here, and that's why they're here. And in less than 24 hours, they'll be flying into it. But for this moment, at least, it's just like home.
Boy, the VC are in trouble now, aren't
they?
Why don't they do it? I didn't think they'd have any damn city valve.
All right.
How's it going?
Real good, sir.
Well, welcome to Tui Wa.
What a crazy place you guys have got here.
Oh, this is a fine place.
Welcome to the fort, George.
Yes, sir. Glad to be here.
Glad to see you, baby.
Welcome aboard, Georgie.
Sir.
How's Ann?
She's fine.
Oh, good.
When this program was filmed in February, Colonel John Austin was commander of the 1st Brigade of the 4th Infantry Division. His troops are spread out over 50 square miles of Vietnamese mountain jungle right north of Tui Wa. Their war is dirty and tough and dangerous. For them, tactical air support's a matter of life and death.
Now, this is my second tour in Vietnam. So in a sense, I'm four-time combat type. One of the first things you learn when you've been in the mill that many times is that nobody does it by themselves. This enemy that we fight out here is basically, you might say, two forms. We have the larger North Vietnamese army formations, which are more compact and which must be hit with more force. And then we have the hundreds of VC, both the local guerrillas who stay near the riverbeds, the roads, and the towns, and the main force, Vietnamese Viet Cong battalions. Each must be fought in a different way. Strike the main forces, the big fella out in the mountains, with heavy force. We dig out the individual VC by guerrilla tactics ourselves. We fragment down into small groups and track him along these trails, and finally hunt him, kill him. If we get hit on the ground, the chopper brings our man out. One of the great differences in this war, in the soldier's morale, is the fact that he knows if he gets hit badly, that he's going to be gotten out of that spot he's in by a helicopter. And the helicopter knows it can get in there because of the air cover above it.
When you first get here, you know, you start hearing these sounds, and every little peep you hear, well, you sit up in bed and kind of wonder, well, is he coming in to get me? Or and then after a while, 2 or 3 weeks here, you kind of get used to the noises. It doesn't bother you after that. But when you first get here, you're in bed asleep, the next guy in the tent next to you has to go out and go to the John. Well, he'll walk between the tents, and you'll swear it was somebody out there coming in after you, just to hear his footsteps going through the sand.
Yeah. The thing that scared me the most when I go off the plane at Tonsonut, I heard small arms fire. I wanted to go right back on the plane and go home.
When we first got here, there was a bunch of guys that had these NCOs in their tents. They would get trying to come in their tents at night after the lights go out. They just about get stabbed by the NCO. Noises like this. It's real dangerous sometimes.
There's people back in the States can see what's here, really.
I do.
Right.
They don't know what's
here. Some people don't think there's a war going on.
That's right. This draft card burning and protesting, I don't see any sense to it. If those people could only see what was going on over here. They just have a different view about it. You know, it's that kind of war.
Describe.
A confusion. I don't think that I'm that I even know enough about it to describe it to anyone else. It's just, like I say, it's confusion over here.
There's no front lines to it.
You don't know who you fight.
Right.
That's right. The difference. Everybody you see is either enemy or friendly. You can't tell because all the people are the same. Look just alike. Most of them act alike. Like they walk on a base and you don't ever know it.
Desk Alpha.
Major Dick Lugi is the air liaison officer with the 1st Brigade of the 4th Infantry Division. He's a former fighter pilot, and now he's a FAC. That's a forward air controller. Flies a small, unarmed, single-engine airplane at treetop level, spotting the VC for the ground troops and marking the target for the fighter pilots. This is a war that's fought like no other war has ever been fought. There are no lines. There's no enemy. Until you find him, or until he finds you. And when a company or a platoon moves out, you take the smallest possible risk. You ask for tactical air support on the target before jumping off.
Item 7, Sider, Sider, 10. Bravo, 301.5. Charlie, 335/.
Because he's flown over the target area, because he knows every single inch of the ground, the forward air controller decides what kind of bombs will do the best job in a pre-planned airstrike.
Napalm. Rockets. 20 millimeter. Operation Adams. No friendly troops within 1,000 meters.
Roger, I have. Roger, Hotel Tango. Switch, give me TACC. Roger, go ahead, I'm ready to copy.
Roger, I copy. Spare aircraft 153 and 436, they should be loaded. And finally, it's up to the men who fly the jets to pass the ammunition.
Keep in mind what you got. We're going to brief for napalm and high drag, and if you get a spare, you'll have low drag, and you'll have to stay on your toes. Okay, pre-flight personal equipment. We want to get out to the aircraft 30 minutes prior to start engine, so that'll be 9:45. So let's leave here about 9:40 and get over to PE and give our parachutes a good check. Look over our personal equipment, load up our 38 with tracer ammo. Your takeoff speed will be 180. Your rotation speed will be 155. Refusal speed is not applicable because of the back 12. Your line speed is 118 at 2,500 foot down the runway, which is which coincides with the 6,000 foot remaining marker.
I don't think that I'm afraid. I never think about it. No guys get killed, and it's like car accidents that always happens to the other guy. Realize that they're shooting back at us, and we do everything we can to make our chances of getting hit a lot less. The guys on the ground are the ones that are really doing the big job in this war. They're the people who have to live on the ground and sleep on the ground and stay dirty for days on end, whereas we have the clean sheets at night. And an officer's club to eat and drink in the evening. Flying over there is really kind of a like fighting an antiseptic type war. You really can't see anything that's going on most of the time. We're flying too fast and normally flying too high to see things on the ground, and we depend to a great degree on what the forward air controller in the light aircraft tells us. Most of the time, we're not able to see anything at all, and we drop our bombs where he tells us to, tells us where the target is. If there are people down there, we certainly don't think about killing people. I know that I think only of trying to put the bombs where he wants them and trying to do the best job I can and hit as close to the target as I can. And I never really think of maybe the bombs would kill anybody that was on the ground. Of course, we know they're down there or else we wouldn't be there.
There are times when the war seems far away. There are other times. The sweating it out when one of your own doesn't make it back.
How long has it been down now?
About 2 hours.
There's all kinds of aircraft up there for. They had Navy and us and two Sabre flights and then the litter flight and A1s and Goonie Birds and A4s, and just all kinds of aircraft. And if he's near the chute, there's no problem at all seeing the chute. We couldn't see him, but I did hear an A1, Hobo 35. Said, "I've got you in sight, I've got mirror flashes, and I have you in sight, 7-1. Turn off your beeper." But no answer, no comments. So, there's a village. He's sitting right on the side of a hill. It's a hill over here and a hill over here where the gunfire, or the automatic weapons are. He's sitting right down in here, and the river runs over here, and there's a village right over here.
On the same side of the river that he's in?
On the other side.
It's about half
a mile, I'd say.
The facts didn't see anybody trying to get in around him today.
No, sir, they couldn't. It's pretty rugged terrain. It'd be a good place for a pickup if they could get to it. But you couldn't see any people in the A1 right down there with him. And he said, "I'm right over the pilot now. Do you have me?" And I had him and I had the chute. But I could see the chute from 20,000 feet.
Well, I hope so. I sure hope they can get in there before dark.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Heavy foliage, there's lots of it.
Well, some of those are a little bare.
That's what I say. Some of it's not as heavily foliaged as most of the mountains.
You can see its light on the top of that one.
They got their eyeballs on him. They had their eyeballs on him up there. So it's a matter of them trying to get into the area. And they've already lost one guy and had a crewman hurt trying to get in there. So if you'll just hang around or if you go over to the club or something, why, give us a call, let us know where you're on by phone so we can get a hold of you and we'll go to town. I don't know whether you want to prepare some of the stuff now or not. I just soon wait till we find out for sure. Okay. If they don't try before night, we're in real trouble.
Chewy Watt, Captain Bird.
Well, Da Nang's going to call us if they get through to Hillsboro, I guess, right?
Yes, sir.
I don't know, Seventh might say something about it being late, but at least get a chance to get him out.
Well, we'll hold it up till, at least till he like, quit trying to get in there tonight.
Right.
He's going to call us back since he gets in here. Well, we'll wait.
Hillsboro said they thought they could get the fire suppressed so they could get in there. They'll go to wherever the beeper is.
Should have been doing that for the last hour and a half. But what's holding it up?
Well, evidently he must be working the beeper because they said it's on for a while and then it's off for a while. Evidently it's URC 10 doesn't work. He better possibly lost it. Or he got out. I don't know how strong that vest is.
See how.
Okay.
Oh, great.
Your place?
Raj, and where are they bringing him into? Great. He's okay. They got him.
Oh, boy.
Raj,
gee,
thanks. Where are they going to take him to?
Thanks for praying, you guys. I'm sure he'll call back in to let us know.
The first thing he's going to say when he gets back is he's going to get all over me because yesterday's flying. I said, well, I'll come off the schedule because you might not make it back.
He was going up there, and I meant he was going to land at Da Nang or someplace.
Yeah. Oh, boy, that's too close.
Good to be back.
Good to see you, Governor.
This is his third war, and he was shot down over enemy territory and plucked out of the jungle by the brave men who fly and die so their comrades can live.
That
was a long time, 4 hours, huh?
420,
wasn't it? That's really tough.
Welcome back, sir.
Hey, thanks, Roy.
Very glad to have you back, sir.
Hey, Charlie.
Hey, actually, we'll talk about it later.
Okay.
We'll go get something to eat.
He and the men of the 31st have much to be thankful for.
We're thy house, O Lord, we come at this solemn hour, acknowledging thy eternal presence. With steadfast adoration, we praise thy holy name and worship thee in spirit and in truth. May we turn in our hymn to hymn number 166. May we stand together as we sing.
Fight a war in a lot of ways, sometimes with guns, sometimes with gifts. Not all the casualties of this war have even yet discovered the pain. These are the children, the orphans, the homeless. These GIs, whose job it is to keep the jets flying, they made these toys at night on their own time. Nobody asked them to do it. And on a quiet Sunday, they get their reward in the warmth of a grateful child's smile, the touch of a small hand stretched out in friendship. And with luck, as the years pass and the boy becomes the man, the girl becomes the woman, they'll remember this Sunday. They'll remember these strangers as their friends, not their enemy. As some part of this war will have been won without a shot being fired. Sometimes the war is a waiting game. Around the clock, the fighter pilots of the 31st are on alert, ready to deliver an immediate airstrike in support of the men on the ground when they need it. And the waiting is the hardest part of the job. But then when the call comes, they're in the air in less than 12 minutes, on target as fast as their jets will take them there. In a few seconds, these men of the 1st Brigade of the 4th Infantry Division, moving carefully, warily across peaceful-looking Vietnamese countryside, will be pinned down by enemy fire. And unable to move, caught out in the open, they'll call for air support, and they'll get it. Field, the first call comes in loud and clear on the command post of the 1st Brigade. It's a request for an immediate airstrike. The request is passed to the air liaison officer, and he decides what ordnance would be most effective and passes the request on to the District Air Support Center, or DASC in Air Force talk.
DASC, Alpha, you have automatic weapons fire. Okay, can you give me a target? Gonna stand scrambling right now.
Seabury is one, that ought to take you up to about noon.
That's two, you all.
Stand by one. Scramble letter 01. Go ahead for information.
Now, Rogers. For this mission, he calls on the 31st Tactical Fighter Wing at Tui Wah. And within minutes, the men on alert are in the air to support those men on the ground.
Is 317/17.
There's no rig out there and there's nobody around.
Contact FAC KG 81351.2.
The FAC, Major Luigi, flies in to direct the airstrike.
There are times when you fly around here, and I think any pilot will agree with me on this. When you fly, when the sun is shining and you look down, the intense beauty of the country from the air, not from the ground, but from the air, is something that you, well, when you look at it, you'd swear there's nothing wrong down there. There can't be. It's just too beautiful. You fly up and down the beaches, especially in the area where I am, on the beach area, and you see this endless miles of white sandy beach and nothing disturbing it, and it's just, it looks peaceful.
Directed to the target by the fact, the war becomes the fighter pilot's very personal war. He knows that the men down there are his men, and that's why he flew across the Pacific, to be with them. This is the war that breaks all the rules. In the midst of it, you try to crowd a lifetime into 5 days of rest and recreation in Hawaii with your wife. You must go back into battle. You know the second parting will probably be more painful than the first. But Don Ossery and his buddy, Captain Brad Terry, met their wives in Honolulu on R&R, and this is how it was for them during the 5 days away from the war.
Thank you.
men are on their way back to war, and the women, as they always have, will go back and wait for them to come home.
Well, that's about it. I think these young people are doing a good job for their country. I think we should be proud of them.
An awkward little girl one day, a fashion model sensation the next. She's sprightly, successful, and 17. See Twiggy in New York Thursday night at 8, Central Time, 7 o'clock on ABC. Later on that evening, enjoy an encore showing of the powerful Cold War drama, Dare I Weep, Dare I Mourn, starring James Mason on ABC Stage 67, Thursday here on ABC.